Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Breakpoint Shorts. In this episode, we're going to be talking about DevOps, but we're going to be doing it in three different series parts. The first part, this video, is all about the culture surrounding DevOps. Hi, my name is Paula Barish, and I'm a technical solution specialist with Microsoft in the Developer and Cloud Platform Group. Let's take a look back at the way software was developed over time. Back in the day, you could think about waterfall methodology as being prevalent in the way software was built, delivered, how quality was managed, and all those types of things. It's still used today, and it's a tried and trusted method for providing great software, but it's starting to show its age a little bit. With constant sort of pressure from the business to deliver more value more quickly and at higher quality, waterfalls tends to break down a little bit. Because end users are waiting for a long time before they actually get the value and the functionality that they're looking for. And by the time they get that value, there's often bugs that need to be fixed, so they're actually waiting even longer. And that brought the advent of more iterative methodologies. And if you think about iterative methodologies, they're interesting, they're relatively new. You think of iterative methodologies being methodologies such as Agile or Scrum or something in between or even something different than what I've just mentioned. The key facet to each of these iterative methodologies is the fact that you're actually delivering less functionality in each release, but you're releasing much more quickly than you would in a waterfall methodology. So over a period of time, as say, for example, a year, you might release an equivalent amount of functionality as you would with the waterfall methodology if you're using Agile or Scrum, but you're getting that value to the end user much more quickly, and you're able to be a little bit more nimble as to how you're actually developing those applications and the quality associated with them. Down the road, maybe there's something even different that sort of replaces agile methodologies. Maybe it's something that's a hybrid of what's happened in the past and what you see now. Who knows? But the bottom line is software and the delivery of software changes over time based on the needs of the business that you're serving. Now, this is an evolutionary process, and hopefully that sort of came through when I was discussing the various different methodologies that we've seen over the past while. And each time you add a new methodology or change the way you deliver value from software to your end users, it's disruptive. It's disruptive to your team that delivers software. It's disruptive to the end users because they are getting value in different ways than they have before. But at the same time, this is something that's inevitable. Frankly, you know, change is the only constant in the universe, and it is something that is going to maintain its prevalence as time goes on. And this is where DevOps really comes in. And DevOps really isn't something necessarily new, but it is something that is gaining more traction within software development teams today. And the reason for that is because teams need ways to actually be much more engaged with the business to deliver value and those types of things. But it also is disruptive, as I mentioned before. And this causes, you know, consternation with teams, both on the end user perspective as well as on the software team perspective. But we haven't really discussed what DevOps is. And DevOps means a lot of different things to different people. Some people say it's all about automation. Some people say it's about how development teams work better with operations teams and things of that nature. And there's lots of different definitions, and I would argue that most of those definitions are not wrong. They're actually quite true, and depending on the point of view that you look at. At Microsoft, we tend to look at DevOps as a three-part conversation, and that's really what this is. And the first part of this is around the culture that you have within your organization. And culture really sort of, it translates to the people that are in your team and in the software projects that are actually delivering value to the business. So how, you know, the people interact with each other and those types of things. And that's what we're gonna talk about specifically in this video. In the second video, we're gonna talk about process and how process enables people to do their best work. And then in the final video, we're gonna be talking about supporting tools and how tools fit into the DevOps process. But really, if you think about DevOps, you think about it in terms of this, and you say that the culture is the most important component of a DevOps capability within an organization. Process supports the culture, and it is an enabler. It is meant to provide air cover for your teams to do their best work, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a future video. And the least important component to DevOps, ironically, is the tooling. And tools that say that they are DevOps tools, I would argue that there's no such thing as a DevOps tool, but there are tools that support a DevOps capability within an organization. And that's the third video we'll talk about after this video and the second video, which is about process. So let's talk a little bit about more about culture and how it fits into a DevOps mindset. So really, if you think about it, let's start off by getting right down to the nitty-gritty of a company. And every company, as you probably imagine, including probably yours, has a mission statement. And what you see here is Microsoft's mission statement, or the three bold ambitions that were announced by Satya Nadella. And they really sort of provide a way to allow people to envision how the company can be great and what we aspire to every day. So when we come into work and we try to do our best work, these are the things that we're trying to achieve. And in this case for Microsoft, it's reinvent productivity and business processes, build the intelligent cloud platform, and then create a more personal computing. So those three facets in this case are basically what is the mission statement for Microsoft in 2016. That may change over time, and it has changed over time, and your company may have different mission statements as well. But the intent behind a mission statement is to rally the entire company around a set of finite principles. You know, who do we stand for as a company? What do we do, and what do we aspire to deliver to our end users or our end customers? And really, this is a rally cry that Microsoft has basically set out for its employees to deliver great value to its customers. Now, what's interesting about mission statements is they tend to be flowery, or they tend to be very aspirational. And in some cases, they're somewhat nebulous in the fact that, you know, maybe they're not concrete. Maybe it's all about delivering happiness or delivering great value to the end customer. And it's kind of hard to quantify those things. But what's interesting about this is this mission statement idea can deliver a great framework, if you will, around how software development teams can rally their own teams to deliver great value to its end customers. And this is the crux of DevOps. It's about delivering value to the end user at a rapid rate and with higher quality. And if you can actually say that the software that you're building for your customers can rally your end users to be much more happy with the software that you're delivering, that is a success. So the intent here is that DevOps should be a capability that's built into every organization that builds software, but it should actually map to the mission statement or to the aspirational goals for the company. And if your software project doesn't sort of map well to that, then maybe you should be rethinking exactly how that sort of fits into the goals of the actual company itself. So that's the first part of this, is just to make sure that you have alignment between your software teams and the software that they're delivering to end users and the end goals of the overall company. This is the first step to actually creating a culture that will allow DevOps to thrive and succeed within your organization. It also means more moving faster, right? So more collaboration, things like that. And that's what you sort of see here on the slide. But when implemented properly, DevOps just doesn't require collaboration between teams. It's something that allows teams to organically work better together. So it's not something that, a team leader will say, I need you to collaborate more between the dev team and the operations team, or the architecture team and the testing team, or the end users and infrastructure teams. It's not all about that. It's all about delivering an organic sort of infrastructure that allows teams to work better together so that it doesn't feel forced. So the dev team and the operations team should have a good conversation, be able to have good conversations. There should be no adversity that is constant or consistent between those different teams, for example. The intent is that teams that work well together succeed more often. And that's really, really important when you're actually moving to more iterative methodologies, like I said, around Scrum or Agile or any other sort of iterative methodology. This is really, really key in the success of delivering software using DevOps, because of the fact that teams are going to have to work in ways that they haven't worked with each other in the past. And this means that, you know, the operations team should have a hand in how the architecture of the solution is actually built. The dev team and the testing team should work much more closely than they ever have in the past. The end users should have a voice earlier on in the conversation and be able to help the team pivot functionality if it seems like it's not going to work earlier on. Those are all things that are very, very important as far as DevOps is concerned. So if you think about common traditional interaction between teams, and this is just representational, it's not necessarily accurate to what you do today, but the intent here is that you have a project and the business basically, and the business analysts, so the proxies for the end users, they provide a set of requirements, and those requirements are, you know, documented, all those types of things. Your architecture team basically takes a look at those requirements and translates that into what the design of the system that will implement those functional points into. Once the architecture has been defined, then obviously developers will create the code and the configurations necessary to actually implement the architecture in the way that's appropriate to the business requirements. And then once dev is done, then that gets tested. And then once everything passes the tests that are required, then it's sent to operations, and operations will manage the application in whatever environment, such as production, that is required. This is a traditional model for interaction between different teams. And like I said, this is not necessarily an exhaustive representation of every single team on a software project, but they're fairly indicative of what most projects look like. But the problem with this is you see, it's actually very sequential. So the business really only talks to architecture. Maybe it's a little bit different on your project, and architecture talks to development, development talks to test and operations and things like that. And yes, there are loopbacks. So if there's a bug that's found in testing, that actually gets put back to development or even architecture or business, depending on what kind of a bug is found and those types of things. But for all intents and purposes, it's a fairly linear process from an interaction standpoint. And that breeds a lack of understanding between different groups. So if you're one or two steps removed from one group and you're in, say, for example, the operations group, you probably don't talk very often to the architecture. And the only time you talk to architecture is when you're actually creating the infrastructure for the solution. And then you never talk to them again unless there's a change that needs to happen. That used to work well. And it works well within a waterfall methodology because of the fact that you have monolithic releases that last, you know, a year, maybe 8 months, 6 months, whatever, but they're long time, so you can actually work within that model. But it doesn't work when you're talking about moving to an iterative approach that requires, you know, releases anything anywhere from, you know, every month to every week to every day to several times a day. It just doesn't work. So you need to have that collaboration and interaction across those different teams to allow that. So in a DevOps interaction, you have a project and each of these teams can actually talk with each other. Now, this is fairly simplistic in its view, understood, but the intent behind this is to say that the operations team should have an open dialogue with the development team whenever it needs to. Likewise, the business should be able to talk to the testing team and architecture and all those different things, right? The ultimate goal between DevOps from an interaction standpoint is that there are no barriers, there are no walls associated with actually creating good software and delivering fast and with higher quality and those types of things. So really that's the crux of that. The other thing that's interesting is that, you know, collaboration doesn't happen on its own. You need to foster it. You need to be able to deliver a collaborative atmosphere and allow people to be able to talk to each other. And that's not always the case. In some cases, you may have rules that say, you know, production teams are not allowed to talk to the development teams because there's that firewall between them, because you don't want code going into production that isn't sanctioned, all those types of things. And that's understood. I think everybody has a good understanding of what that means. But it also means that, you know, if you want to have a collaborative atmosphere, which is required for DevOps to succeed as a capability within an organization, it means that you need to break down some of those walls, right? It requires presence, if you will. And what we mean by presence is it means that people should be able to, you know, have a conversation with others within an or within a room, not necessarily a meeting room and creating meetings and all those types of things, but, you know, step up from their cubicle and be able to talk to somebody in the hallway or in another cubicle and things like that. Or in the case of teams that are geographically disparate, so say for example you have a team in India and you have a team in Canada, well, you know, obviously you're not going to be able to have those teams located together because obviously they're halfway across the globe from each other. But being able to have the right tools in place to allow them to have a telepresence with each other so that they can Skype each other, that they can, you know, have a conversation with somebody around how they actually, you know, have a problem, and then they can get that fixed by just having a conversation. And of course, time zones play a part into this as well and all those types of things. But the intent here is that you should have a way to be able to freely discuss components of a project, not just issues, but just, you know, be able to, you know, sling ideas off of each other and say, hey, what if we did this and what if we did that and all those types of things. And that's really, really important to actually deliver that capability. And part of this also is allowing the tooling, and we're going to talk about tooling, like I said, in a later telecast. But the intent here is that, you know, the tooling will actually save conversations where they're, you know, recorded and things like that too, which is helpful because it allows people to sort of, you know, not have to worry about taking meeting notes and things like that. But the intent here is that those conversations should be organic. It shouldn't be forced, like having to set up a weekly meeting. Even though weekly meetings and long-standing meetings are important, it shouldn't be the only way that people collaborate. Now, there you see on the slide here, there's a bunch of links associated with how the Visual Studio team and Microsoft in general actually adopted, you know, agile methodologies and things like that. You can take a look at those links if you want. They provide some details around how we as Microsoft have implemented a collaborative atmosphere to help teams work better together to deliver great software. So I'll leave that as an exercise to you at a later date if you want. It also means when you talk about collaboration, about changing how you work. So as I mentioned before, if you remember from the slide just you know, a couple slides ago where there was a sequential sort of interaction points between traditional teams, and then in a DevOps team it's sort of a ringed area where basically anybody can talk to each other, you know, it means that the interactions are going to change, and those changes may not necessarily be comfortable, or they may not necessarily feel appropriate, or maybe they may be uncomfortable at first because you've never talked with some of these teams before, or at least the times that you talk with those teams, it was under very strict conditions and things like that. So it's going to take some time to actually, you know, feel this process out and to allow you to be able to, you know, to do this in an organic way, as I said before. Now, it's important to understand that when you start off having this more open dialogue across teams, you know, it may not feel right at first, and that's okay. If you have ever golfed, for example, and you know you have a swing and it works well, but you know you want to get a little bit more distance out of your drive, for example, well then you may go to a swing coach and the swing coach tells you to change this part of your swing and it doesn't feel quite right to you, and it, you know, you actually are doing worse at first because you have to adjust to the swing. That's okay, right? So because you're adjusting to something that's different, it's going to take some time and practice to actually get right before you can get that extra distance from the golf ball. Well, it's the same thing with team interaction. So you may not have a situation where it feels right at first, but persevere, right? Try to have those organic conversations with the other members of the team, because that will actually allow you to get better at it. And you'll understand better the personalities on the team as well, because it's not just about, you know, one team talking to another. Teams are made up of individuals, and each individual has his or her own personality. And getting to understand how those personalities will work together, or frankly, sometimes not work together, depending on how that works, is really important. And the only way you're going to learn that is if you actually work at it and try new things and try to have those conversations on a more regular basis as well. So what you might be seeing here is that, you know, as I said before, failure is something that you can kind of expect at first. And it might be something that, you know, might be something that you have to deal with. But, you know, an early indicator, as you can see on the screen here, of being on the wrong path or right path is how you approach problems as a team. And what I mean by this is saying that Okay. A problem comes up and you may involve people from different parts of the team that you never did before. And how you succeed on solving those problems will vary over time as well. But if you find that there's a consistency in saying, hey, you know what, this really works well when we involve these people from this team on a challenging obstacle that we're looking at. Or we look at other components where, you know, the team may not work well together because, you know, you never solve the problem properly. So finding a consistency in failure and a consistency in success will tell you whether or not you're on the right path and finding the secret formula for how to interact with other teams as well. So a good example here is, you know, the old approach might be a highly documented and structured engagement rule. So, you know, like I said before, the operations team may or may not be allowed to talk to the development team, especially on the production side, because of the fact that they don't want to have that cozy relationship just to make sure that, you know, non-production code doesn't go into production, those types of things. And that's not to say that that shouldn't be the case going forward. You should absolutely maintain structure around what code goes into production, obviously. But the intent behind a DevOps approach is that you bring the right resource into a conversation as early as possible so that you can solve a problem, right? That's okay. And it means that there's probably a little less structure as to how you do that. And it means that there has to be an understanding between the person asking the question and the person answering the question, whether or not there is a problem with how much expertise is being used and things like that. So say, for example, you have an infrastructure expert that seems to be called upon all the time whenever there's a problem. Well, maybe that's a bottleneck that you need to take a look at. And there's things around that that you need to be aware of. So finding other ways to sort of involve those people as well is important. So it's not just a question of saying, hey, always involve person X in these conversations, but because maybe that is not a good use of time. It's also a question of finding the right times to involve people and their skill sets so that they can actually provide value while at the same time not compromising other parts of the project because they're being pulled off on your part of the project as well. Like I said, this may introduce things such as confusion and may cause failure in how you sort of interact with each other at first, but it's important to understand that, you know, that's okay. And leadership has to understand that failure is a part of changing how you move to a DevOps capability within the organization. Over time, you'll find out how to interact more appropriately with other people from a, you know, collaboration standpoint so that, you know, you get the ability to be effective and to be right to the point and fix problems as quickly as possible. But it'll also give you, and this is the bold part because I think this is really important, is the fact that as you start having these conversations, you'll get a sense for what people are really, really good at. And part of the problem that a lot of people have is that, you know, because there's these very structured ways of interacting with other groups, you never get to understand what people's skill sets are really strong at. And in a DevOps culture, it means that you're actually catering to the successes and the strengths of each of the individuals within the team. And that's important because you'll find out exactly who's strong at, say, for example, configuration management, and who's strong at, you know, development or bug triage and all those types of things as well. Those are just very generic examples, but you sort of get the idea from that, right? You get to see this, and by finding out where people are strong, other people will learn from those people as well, so that you're actually distributing the wealth of skill on the team, while at the same time having subject matter experts that you can pull upon when necessary as well, within reason, of course, as well. And what's interesting about this is I talked about the fact that failure is something that you can expect and you should expect earlier on, and you will have different varying levels of failure throughout the process as you adopt the capability of DevOps within your organization. Is, you know, failure is always a good opportunity to learn. And this is something that you probably know within your own careers as well, is the fact that you find that the times that you failed at something, you learn more from that than you do from success. And I think that's a fairly common sort of understanding. Well, it's true within DevOps as well, and it's true within group dynamics as well. So as you deliver something, you'll find out what went right and what went wrong. And the things that went wrong, you'll learn from very, very quickly. Whether that means, you know, introducing somebody into the process earlier on, maybe if they need to, or having better communication between different teams, or doing something a little bit differently when you deliver that software or deploy it, whatever it might be. Those types of things are really, really important. And this is something that I think sort of transcends just DevOps, but it's true of anything, and I think everybody can understand that. The intent behind failure is that when you do fail, you find and recognize that you failed, and you fail fast. And when you fail fast, then you learn from it, and you do your, you know, post-mortem, if you will, and you find out what things you could do better. And a good example of this, as you can see on the screen, is SpaceX. Now, SpaceX, if you're not familiar with the company, they are a company that is a private space company. So they have built a number of different sort of rockets that they've they've launched into the into the lower geosynchronous orbit and of the Earth, obviously. And then they've actually landed those rockets once they've gone into space, and they've actually plummeted back to Earth, but they've had a controlled landing onto a pad on a ship in the middle of the ocean, which is phenomenal and miraculous in a lot of ways from an engineering standpoint. But you can sort of see here some of the statistics. You know, between 2010 and 2016, SpaceX launched 26 rockets, and their first success of was landing a rocket was the ninth launch in 2014, and you can sort of see that the first landing pad landing was the December 2015, I should say. And that's significant, because there's a lot of failure that happened before they actually got their success. But what's also interesting is the fact that these failures allowed them to learn and to tweak their process, and not from just only a software process, but also from an engineering perspective, like physical engineering and aerospace engineering. Also from a supply chain perspective, you know, creating rockets at a more fast pace, because now that they've actually built out the muscle around, you know, creating the parts for these rockets, they were able to do that more quickly and more quickly and more quickly as well. So all these different things, the failures that they had, were key opportunities for them to learn on how to do better going forward. And a good example of this, you can sort of see here, there's some anecdotal evidence, but you can see on the chart here, these are the days between the launches. So you can see launch number 1 through 26, which was the data that you saw before. You know, between the first and second launch, there was almost 550 days between the first rocket and the second rocket. But you could see very, very quickly that curve goes down and down and down. And then as you see from the 22nd launch all the way through to the 26th launch, their time to actually create new rockets and launch those new rockets for testing and things like that went down to, you know, within, you know, several sort of times a month that they could actually do a launch. This is anecdotal. Well, it's not anecdotal. It's qualitative. It's quantitative sort of data saying the time between launches. But the fact of the matter is, you can evidently see exactly the fact that they've learned from their mistakes, and because they've failed, they've actually been able to learn from that, and they've improved their process. Everything from the software to the engineering into the supply chain and everything else associated with it as well. They've managed to create a solution that now works quite well, and they're still testing and they're still failing and they're failing fast and all those types of things. But it goes to show you that, you know, over time, if you do something and you try to build the muscle around how to do things better every single time, that actually leads to success in the end. So again, here's some resources that you can take a look at on how Microsoft approaches DevOps and how we've learned to fail fast and what we've learned and things like that. There's a link to the Visual Studio site called the Microsoft Engineering Stories. And there you can see it's a DevOps one that I'm linking to in this case. And there's also some videos associated with that, and I provided the link specifically to one about how Microsoft approaches DevOps, and you can take a look at that at your leisure as well. So that's just a very quick example of some of the things that you can deliver from a culture standpoint. It's really, really important to understand that the culture or the cultural mindset to allowing you to succeed with DevOps means that you have a much more collaborative atmosphere. It means that you're open to having discussions with teams that you may not have had traditional discussions with before. It means that you deliver ways to actually have conversations in ways that you've never done before. And it means that you're open to failure, and your leadership accepts the fact that you will fail at first. As long as you learn from that, that's something that you can actually learn from it and deliver. So that means that you actually have to change a little bit of the way your culture works, right? There has to be an understanding that failure is part of the process, and that, you know, it's okay to fail. It's okay to try things. And we'll talk a little bit about this in the next video around process and things like that. So just keep that in mind with actually how you deliver your DevOps capability within your organization. And this will help you sort of deliver success down the road as well. So if you're interested in actually getting started with DevOps, there's ways to do that Microsoft can help you with. So it requires planning, right? So it's not something that, happens overnight. You need to actually create a plan for how you're going to approach DevOps. Now, you may have components of your culture set up to support you to get to a DevOps capability within your organization. That's great. But just understand that, you know, you have to provide a structured framework for you to get there. And it's okay to sort of deviate from that framework if necessary, but you should basically be honing it as time goes by. So everything from discovery and definition to planning how you're going to do it. And then finally, and the most important component, is doing it. And then also measuring how successful you are. And also in the failures, are you failing on the same things all the time? And if you are, well, then maybe you need to revisit how that sort of works and things like that as well. So there's lots of different things that you need to do to deliver a good sort of culture for building out DevOps. And then we're also going to talk about process as well. Beyond that, learn from others, right? And this is something that, you know, we as a company, as Microsoft, have done, you know, as well. We've taken the dive into learning about DevOps and implementing a DevOps capability within our organizations across engineering teams and such. And we succeeded in some cases, we failed in some cases, we learned from every time that we failed. And I think that's important to understand. So what we've done is those engineering stories that I sort of linked to give you an example of how we approach DevOps from a number of different sort of facets. And you can take a look at how we approached it and use that however is, you know, appropriate within your own organizations to actually deliver a DevOps capability as well. So definitely learn from our failures as well as our successes, and maybe use that as a building block as part of your journey towards DevOps as well. And we can also help. There's a number of different sort of capabilities that we provide. We have a DevOps assessment, and you can see the link there at devopsassessment.azurewebsites.net. It provides you with a maturity level assessment to find out whether or not you are, as an organization, ready to adopt components of DevOps. So definitely take a look at that. It'll probably be a little bit of an eye-opener for you to determine, you know, where you might need to focus on to get to a DevOps capability that is clicking on all cylinders, or firing on all cylinders, if you will, as well as that. Also, talk to your Microsoft account team. So most companies have it, and if not, well then you can talk to Microsoft online and find out more details around our tooling and learnings and things like that to help you build out the muscle that you need to create a DevOps capability. And then finally, take a look at our engineering story site, and that's the third sort of bullet point that you see there. Stories.visualstudio.com is a great resource for you to learn about how we approach DevOps. And it's worthwhile taking a look at, because I think you'll find that it wasn't all successes and it wasn't all failures. It was a mix of everything, not unlike the way it will be for you when you go down this route as well. It's a journey. It's not something that happens overnight, but it's well worth it, because you end up with a solution internally or a capability internally to deliver value at higher quality and at a quicker cadence for your end users, and therefore your end users will be happier as a result as well, which is ultimately what we as software development and infrastructure professionals are really trying to deliver, is happiness to our customers so that they can get their work done or be happier with the solution that you've built in general. So thank you very much, and we'll see you in the second set in this series, where we talk about process considerations when talking about DevOps. Thank you.